Here it comes again. Lunch. Will it be the same old, same old? Or are you ready to take a vacation from the ordinary with the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub at Firehouse Subs? Freshly sliced smoked turkey breast, craveably sweet mustard sauce, and a hint of Caribbean seasoning. Just $5.55 for a medium. Save time. Order the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub on the Firehouse Subs app. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Participating locations. Limited time only. Plus tax. Prices may vary for delivery.
The theme song, The Third Strike, plays in the key of life on my mental game system. Listen, my mind free and last. Blast the message, my brain protected by this ironclad. High flyer mask, raps get twisted like a phoenix splash. Still pulling all-nighters, still MacGyver, still dropping bombs. The insight for like striking, juicing like a... Who gon' stop the writer? Your favorite rapper's a liar. Built a high ladder, but fear of heights got me afraid to climb up. Chronophobia got me watching until my time's up. I'm clocking in and running from the clock simultaneous.
All right, welcome to a special edition of Voices of Wrestling. I'm Rich Craig, of course. No Joe Lanza today, but that's fine because we got a very special guest here. We have a member of the legendary, world-renowned Detroit hip-hop group, Clear Soul Forces. We have Novelist in the house. Novelist, what's going on?
Yo, what's going on, man?
So, so this is a big moment for you. You got, by the time most of you guys listen to this, he'll have a new album out, Cerebral Apex. It'll be out. You can get it at novelist.bandcamp.com. So you can get physical CDs. You can purchase downloads there at novelist.bandcamp.com. Also be streaming on Spotify, wherever the hell you get your music from. You'll be able to get that. But Cerebral Apex from Novelist. But, thank you, of course, for coming onto the show. And you can let people know if they don't know who you are exactly, the Clear Soul Forces they're not aware of, Novelist and Cerebral Apex, what they can sort of expect from the album.
Oh man, I'm from a Novelist, Clear Soul Forces. That's my group. Got a solo album coming out tomorrow. I'm real big into anime and that kind of culture. So I actually have been writing a manga book for the past 2 years, and this album tells a bit of the story that I've been writing, over the past 2 years. And it's my fiance actually narrates the story in between songs, and it's a project I've been working on for a while, so I'm excited for it to come out tomorrow. I just dropped a new video today for it, for a song called 5 AM in Shibuya, so check that out. So it's on my YouTube channel. Just type in Novelist on YouTube; it'll come up.
It's an awesome video as well, and I know a lot of our Japanese wrestling fans will enjoy that. It's got a little bit of references to the stuff going on in Japan and whatnot, which is great. And that's the thing, big reason why I wanted to bring you on the show here, because not only am I a fan of Clear Soul Forces, I have been for quite a while. That's actually when I first stumbled upon you. Is there was somebody in our mentions all the time, we'd be talking about Japanese wrestling or whatnot, and I'd see this person come up with the verified symbol. I'm like, whatever. And then it was probably like the 15th time I clicked, I was like, oh wait a minute, like holy shit, that's like I had like one of those weird. I never had assumed that would ever cross over, because I'm a big hip-hop underground hip-hop fan and whatnot, so I've been following you guys forever. And then when I was like, holy shit, thanks, he watches Japanese wrestling, like this is the greatest thing in the world, like everything matches up. But we'll get to your wrestling here in a little bit, but I think what's interesting, you talked about the anime, and I think that is one thing for people that if you never checked out Novelist, anything else that you've done, if you go on Spotify, obviously you can listen to all that. You can get the stuff at novelist.bandcamp.com, as we mentioned. But a lot of your albums, your solo stuff, has all been sort of themed, and a lot of the themes have been, in a way, there's been different beat makers that you've sort of done entire albums with, but they seem to always be sort of wrapped around in anime a little bit, and that I found kind of interesting. I'm not a huge anime fan, but I know a bunch of our listeners are. What's been the biggest, or why do you think maybe you've been able to meld anime and hip-hop so closely, and why is that just something that you believe in heavily and those are two of your favorite things, or do you think that there's some relation between the two art forms that allow you to sort of combine them as well as you do?
I think more or less it's just two things that I love that I combine together. I feel like it's kind of the same as when I drop wrestling lines in my music. My group, we just made an entrance theme for ACH. He uses it when he wrestles on MLW. And as far as the anime thing for me, I used to watch Samurai Champloo. That's like my all-time favorite anime. And I saw it in high school, and it was the first time I really saw anime and hip-hop being like bridged together. Because Nujabes is a Japanese producer, he's like, I don't know if you guys are familiar, but he's kind of like the Japanese, like Dylan.
Yeah, basically.
And he did the whole soundtrack for that show, And it's just, and that show like really blew my mind when I saw it for the first time. So it's just always been something that I wanted to try. And it's, and I just kind of, you know, blend two passions that I have together, and it just comes out, you know, how it does.
So let's talk about a little bit about your history in hip hop and in the music industry. How did it sort of start? Was it something that you always knew that, hey, I was going to be a rapper, or is this something that sort of blossomed later in life?
For me, I grew up playing sports, man. I played basketball and football through high school. I had a basketball scholarship. I played in college. I played at the school called Rochester College. And I always made music as kind of like a little side thing. But the older I got, I feel like my whole life, like I've always been a good basketball player, but I was never like the best guy on the team. You know, mm-hmm. I was always solid, but I was never the best guy. I was never like the star. And like music was like the one thing in my life where I always felt like I had a chance to be like the best guy, you know. And that's kind of when I was getting a little older, I started like really, you know, really putting my effort into it and really investing myself in it. And that's kind of how it came about. I used to do stuff, but it got serious for me like when I was kind of getting close to getting out of college and stuff.
Yeah, and as far as, you know, we mentioned before that you're, you know, Clear Steel Forces, you guys are based in Detroit, and of course you're based in Detroit as well. How important was that scene sort of coming up and getting as hot as it was for a while there in your sort of, because had that scene maybe not have blown up as much as it did, where you had a bunch of guys coming from there, your Elzai's, your Slum Villages or whatnot, growing a little bit. Obviously, you know, Eminem, of course, you know, kind of the almost in some ways the godfather of that entire scene,
right,
of Detroit hip hop. Had that maybe, was that something that sort of influenced you too, of saying like, hey, look, there's guys from my town that are doing this and doing this on a big stage, and you know, Royce 5'9", I forget to mention as well, like these big time guys that are doing this, did that sort of influence or help you sort of decide, hey, look, I can maybe do this as well?
I don't know if it made me think I could do it myself or my group, but the thing that it does do is it, Detroit is a place where you have like really strong hometown influence. Like you have guys that have like built this scene, but it's not like, with the exception of like Eminem and like Nile Royce, there's like underground guys who have like became legends and made a living off of making music, you know. And that, those are the guys that kind of like give you the vision that you can do it, you know, like your Elzai's and your Slums, mm-hmm. and your Dillas and your Guilty Simpsons. Like one time we had went on tour, we were gone for like a month and a half on a tour in Europe, and we came back, and on the way back, Guilty Simpson was on our plane, like, you know, flying out of Amsterdam and coming back to the States. And that was actually my first time meeting Guilty. So it was cool. And he was coming from Russia, you know what I'm saying? So it was like stuff like that. Yeah. And seeing guys like that, even producers, man, Black Milk, Apollo Brown.
Yeah.
Those guys are all from, you know, they're all from Michigan, man. Like Michigan is like it's so many people, Danny Brown, it's just tons of guys that have made it out of this scene and done their thing, man. And it's inspiring to say the least, you know, and it does kind of give you that, you know, that sense that you can do it. I mean, Royce, I'm actually real cool with Royce, man. He's my homie. I was in his studio a lot when he was making Book of Ryan. And I heard, you know, a lot of the songs that he was doing, and he's like one guy who, as well off as he is, and as far as he's gotten, he's like has no problem with letting guys like kind of taking newer guys and younger cats like under his wing and kind of kicking it with them and stuff. So I think it's real dope that he does that.
Yeah, and now while we're on the, you know, the Detroit scene a little bit, I mean it's without a doubt my favorite of the hip hop scenes, and it's been for quite a while as well. Like you said, because of those guys that you mentioned, the producers as well, the Dilla, the Black Milk, the Apollo Brown, those sort of guys. One thing I love about it, and maybe you can speak to this a little bit too, and it kind of plays out to your guys, you know, name, the Clear Soul Forces or whatnot, is there just seems to be a different sort of soul and different rhythm, which makes sense coming from Detroit. You know what I mean? Like that would be the place where that would absolutely go. But that's always what attracted me to that scene a little bit more. Is it just felt like music. It was just a little bit better than everybody else. You know what I mean? Like, that's a sort of bragging. I mean, if you want to, but it's always just felt like there was a little bit more soul, a little bit more character, a little bit more musically there. And it that's what always attracted me to the scene. But for people that might not know, maybe there's people that just kind of casual listen to hip hop, how would you maybe describe, you know, not only what you guys do with Clear Soul Forces and what you do as a solo artist, but also what that scene sort of encapsulates and why, you know, not to wrap everything into one little thing, but I feel like there is just kind of a general idea of like, hey, this scene sort of sounds this way. And you get that with a bunch of scenes, you know, Atlanta for a long time sounded like it did, you know, obviously New York has its sort of renowned sound, but to someone that's maybe a casual listener, how would you sort of describe, you know, what you guys do and what the Detroit sound in a way sort of is?
I really think that Detroit's sound is just, it's just soul, man. It's just a soulful, it's very soulful. And I think that, it's definitely a bar that you have to live up to. You know, if you want to make it out of Detroit, making hip hop music, it's definitely a challenge, and it's a place where, I mean, you know, you always have your hip hop scenes, and then you have like your street, you know, your I guess like your more popular kind of mainstream type of music that people make, but like if you want to make it out of, you know, Detroit, the hip hop scene, I mean, it's definitely there's this bar that you have to meet, that you measure up to, you know, it's tough being compared to other people, but it's something that people are going to do, you know, and it's out of your control. So when you make music, you kind of have to be aware that these are the names that have made it from Detroit that you're going to be compared to. And it's a very, very, you know, prestigious like group of guys.
Yeah, so that's, of course, as we mentioned here, we'll get to the wrestling here in a bit, but new album, Cerebral Apex, coming out August 28th, novelist.bandcamp.com, also streaming wherever you go. Also, I forgot to mention as well, if people want to follow you on Twitter, I mentioned you interacting on Twitter, it's at The Novelist, that's obviously T-H-E, and then N-O-V-E-L-I-S-S, so that's at The Novelist on Twitter. Let's get a little bit to the wrestling now. So, of course, for people that have listened to your stuff, and that's sort of where, you know, I've always listened to your solo stuff and the Clear Soul, and I've heard wrestling references there, and, you know, here and there and whatnot. But like, all right, cool, you watch the wrestling or whatnot. I didn't know you were as deep as you were. So let's get into that, because you are as deep as almost any, you know, rapper that I've talked to. And I've had a few on here that I've talked to. I've talked to Consequence and John and other guys. And, they know they're wrestling. They're hardcore wrestling fans. But, man, you're up at 2 a.m. watching Japanese wrestling. Yeah. You know, that's so you're different. You know what I mean? Like, those guys, they know they're wrestling. But, man, you're staying up late, getting up early, doing that sort of stuff. Before we get to that sort of stuff, how did you get into wrestling? Was it something that you just from early days you get into, or is it something you got into the Attitude Era? Where's sort of your scope of reference for people that might not know? And how old are you, by the way, for people that don't know? Because that's always good for wrestling, you know.
Yeah, I'm 29, man. I'm 29. I actually remember the day I started watching wrestling. My mom was my stepdad, who it wasn't my stepdad at the time. She was just dating him. I was a really young kid, and I didn't really like him, and he was trying to like get on my good side. You know what I'm saying? So I remember he called my mom and he wanted to talk to me, and I was like, you know, I don't want to talk to him. I was young. I was young, man. I was probably like maybe 7 or something like that. So he calls, and, you know, I get on the phone, and he's like, oh, man, turn it to USA, you know, and I'm like, why? And he's like, Vader's breaking Yokozuna's leg, man, you got to see this. And I'm like, what? You know, who's Vader? I don't know who he's got. So then I turned it on, and I ended up, that was like the first time I watched wrestling, and I was like hooked after that. And then, you know, after that, the older I got, I kind of got my own, you know, I shaped my own taste in wrestling. Like, I always tell people that, like, the WCW cruiserweights are what I think made me into, like, a lifelong wrestling fan.
Yeah, no, that's interesting that you mentioned that, because I just talked about that on this last episode of A Voice of Wrestling, is that, like, you know, I had watched, like, in 1994 or whatnot, like you said, like, the kind of the Yokozuna. I do, my first wrestling memory is actually Yokozuna as well, which is pretty interesting.
Oh, that's crazy.
I think he was, like, sitting on a cloud or something like that. That's where I'm like, people are like, you know, it's fake. I'm like, well, yeah, the first time I watched wrestling, there was, like, a sumo wrestler, like, sitting on a cloud. Like, yeah, I knew it was fake. Like, it's fine. I didn't care. I enjoyed it anyway, but I didn't think that was actually happening, that a sumo wrestler was fighting a clown. But, but then I kind of got away from it, you know, a little bit, like kind of casually watched it. And then I remember one time just flipping channels and I turned on Nitro and I saw like Mysterio or Juventud. I forget who it was.
Oh, yeah.
And just being like, holy shit, this is like nothing I'd ever seen before. And then that sort of became, and that sort of, as you said, kind of shaped me for life. And I'm still to this day, like, there's people that love their Hulk Hogan's or whatnot. And of course, I like the big heavyweights and that sort of stuff. But give me like, you know, fast paced action over any of those guys.
I'm the same way, man.
And I think that's where we kind of come up. Like, you know, I mean, if you had started watching in the 80s or whatnot, you would get more, oh, I like, you know, the big hulking monsters that have these big matches or whatnot. But for me, I'm like, no, man, I want action. I want, you know, quick paced
stuff like
that. So, yeah. So it's good that it's interesting that you're kind of similar in that sense. So you said, you know, that's kind of the cruiserweights got you going. When did you sort of feel like you became like a hardcore, like this is the thing now, like this is the thing that I'm watching a lot, you're doing a lot? Because that sort of, there was always that time, especially, you know, you're saying you watched during the Nitro and the cruiserweights. I had, you know, a bunch of my friends watch Nitro and Raw or whatnot, and then there was a way where they kind of went one way and then I went the other way, and I'm still that way, sure. And they're still that way, you know what I mean? But that's like, because everybody watched it at the same time, but then you had to, there had to be a moment where you were like, nope, this is my thing and I'm watching this forever.
I think, honestly, man, because, I mean, I grew up, you know, obviously watching it all the time, every Monday. My mom used to let me order a couple pay-per-views a year. I want to say that kind of, I guess when you get old enough to like who you like and not who they tell you to like, you know what I mean? So, like, the thing that I think made me into a really big wrestling fan was, like, when WWE had bought everything and, you know, everything had kind of became like just bunched up in WWE and everybody was there. I watched it for a while, but once like 2005 rolled around, that's when I started to watch other stuff. You know, like I remember I had a friend who showed me Ring of Honor when I was like, man, 2005. I don't remember how old I would have been, but I was a teenager in 2005, and I had a friend who showed me Ring of Honor, and the first Ring of Honor match I ever saw was Kenta versus Low Ki.
Oh, jeez, you came like, pretty good.
yeah, you know, so like, and that's like the style that I love. Like, I love Japanese strong style. I love Japanese wrestling, and I think that is what really kind of shaped my taste in wrestling. It made me be like, oh, there's stuff outside of this. Oh man, you know, like I'm constantly looking this stuff up, you know. And then, you know, another thing I forgot to mention is I had a buddy. I used to love ECW, right? I used to stay up to like 3 a.m. watching ECW.
Yeah, I did the same. I had to watch it on like, there was a Gary Indiana channel that I had to watch at like 3 a.m. on.
Yeah, it was like it was a super random channel out here in Michigan that I used to watch it on. And Rob Van Dam was my favorite wrestler, and I think the guy who really made me start like a Japanese wrestling was Hayabusa, man. There was a match. It was Rob Van Dam and Sabu versus Hayabusa and what's my man?
Sasaki, right? Sasaki.
Yeah, Jensei Shinseki. Yeah, and that match and I had a friend whose dad was a big wrestling fan, so he would like do the tape trading thing, and he gave me a tape that had some Hayabusa matches on it, and that's probably what really, you know, made me like, oh my god, this is I love this, you know what I'm saying? And I just never stopped. Whenever WWE got crappy, I just would branch out and find other stuff.
Yeah, and you mentioned a little bit about, you know, the guys that you mentioned that sort of stuck out to you, the Low-Kis, the Hayabusas, whatnot. Were you watching anime at this time as well? Like, was that kind of a lifelong thing? Like, again, I'm not a huge anime guy, so I won't unfortunately get like too deep into that. But did that influence a little bit of your decisions on who you liked in wrestling and what sort of action you liked as well?
Definitely, man. I started watching anime when I was like probably like 10. My uncle was always getting like weird Japanese stuff, you know, and video games and whatnot. So I was watching anime, and I do think that had something to do with it, because I just have always loved like Japanese stuff and culture, and like I've always been into martial arts, and I've always like all my favorite wrestlers are Japanese guys, you know what I'm saying? So I think that definitely had something to do with it for sure.
Yeah, and so like you said, no, now you've seen like the Hayabusas, you've seen the Ring of Honor, you've kind of gone that way and branched out. And you mentioned a few of those, you know, as far as like modern wrestling, you know, how did you sort of get into, because I know you're pretty big in New Japan Pro Wrestling now these days. When was, you said the Hayabusa got you a little bit into, to you know, Puro. When did you really decide on and really start consuming a lot of it? Was it around the 2011, 2012 when a lot of us got in? Or like when did you really start consuming, you know, not only New Japan, but any sort of Japanese wrestling?
Right. Well, The first tape that I ever got, you know, tape trading with people was, it was Super J Cup, 94.
Yeah, that's the famous. 90,
yeah. It was Super J Cup. Obviously, Hayabusa was in it. I knew who he was before that because I had got the tape from. It was a later. It was later material that I got, but when I got Super J Cup, I had already knew who he was, and I think watching that man and just seeing like Liger and you know, Ultimo Dragon and Sasuke and all those guys. That I think. When I watched that, that's when I was like, you know, I love it. But it was still hard to find. Yeah. I didn't – I think probably about the same. I started watching New Japan – or probably more All Japan, like early 2000s and like Pro Wrestling Noah, because I really followed Kenta for a long time. And then – so I was probably watching that in like 2000, around 2008, you know, 2007, 2008. And then – I didn't watch WWE for like a couple years, and then I actually didn't really jump into New Japan hardcore until AJ got there. So that was like what, 2014?
Yeah, 13, 14. I forget off the top of my head exactly when he got in. So
I found out about like New Japan World, and that's when I started faithfully watching New Japan. It was like 2014.
That's interesting that you mentioned. I'm glad that you said that you were watching the Noah and the All Japan and that sort of stuff. Cause that, you know, for a lot of us, that's when, cause for me, you know, when I really started getting hardcore into it was the 2011, 2012, but you know, the Noah and All Japan and what's not. And I would watch a little bit of it cause I have to like download it. And it was impossible. You know,
same,
what I mean?
Yeah, like, same here.
So, like, what was your source? Cause everybody had their little, like, were you like a mega upload guy or you were like, cause everybody had their weird like torrents or whatnot.
Yeah.
What was your, no one's going to come at us for, you know, sorry, you know, I think we'll be fine.
I was always a mega upload guy because I was afraid of. I always was scared to use torrents for some reason, and I actually had a homie. I had a homie who was like the torrent master too, but I just never. I for some reason I thought they were worse than because like mega upload. It was like the zip file, you know, and you could, and it was like kind of more straightforward than like the whole torrent thing. And I would just, I don't know. And torrents would download so fast. And it would kind of like scare me because I'd be like, why is this downloading so fast? Like, what else do I have to do to it? You know, like mega upload, it's taking forever. So like, you kind of knew that the thing you were actually wanting was there, I guess. So like, I was always afraid to use like torrent sites. So I was like, mega upload guy.
Yeah, it's only been like recently that I've embraced a little bit more of the torrent. But yeah, I used to be the same. I used to be the mega upload, which was the worst too, because like we always talk about that in wrestling. Like, you know, it was like, oh, in 15 hours, like I cannot wait to watch this. And then
exactly.
Go to school, or you go to sleep, and you come back, and the download stopped, and you're like, oh.
And it's exactly, and something happened to it, and then you got to do it again.
Like, oh, damn, man, it's like no, the kids don't know though. You know, these kids go in the New Japan World, and they're, you know, All Japan TV. Yep. I don't know.
HD, they get to watch in HD and everything.
I don't know what it used to be like, but no, it's interesting that you mentioned those sort of guys. I'm glad you mentioned All Japan and Noah really attracted you, and Kenta. We'll talk a little bit about him as well because I think he's a guy that really caught my eye as well, and was one of the big guys that I became a big fan of. I know Joe, who I do the Voice Wrestling podcast with. It's one of his top five wrestlers of like all time. Like maybe his
he's in my top five too.
Yeah, he's just incredible. What was it that kind of attracted you to him? Was it I mean, there's so much about him that I you know, we probably all have the same thing, but what is it about Kenta that made you kind of stand up and go, holy crap? Like,
oh man. I mean, obviously I'm not a very big guy. I'm like 5'9", 5'10", and just him being like a shorter guy, and he was like the first, I told you, the first Kenta match I saw was Kenta versus Low Ki. So, yo, you know what I'm saying? Like, just seeing this cat just literally just beat the hell out of other guys, and just the, like, I think the thing that really, like, he had that combo he used to do, man, where it would be like two slaps, a little back fist, and then the roundhouse of the face, and then he would do the, like, he had that combo, and that was the first time I saw striking on that level. I mean, Low Ki was impressive too, but I think it's just the striking, man. Like, I love, like I said before, I love Japanese strong style, and he was the first guy I saw that just had, like, crazy martial arts in his offensive repertoire, and it just changed my whole perspective on wrestling.
Yeah, he's incredible. Have you ever gotten a chance to see him live?
No, man. I've never got to see him live.
Experience. Well, hopefully one day he'll return to the wrestling world. I would like to. I don't acknowledge whatever he does now. So.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't either. So it's sad. I compare him to Derrick Rose, man, because I just think we got cheated out of his.
Yeah.
You know, we got cheated out of his like his prime on the big stage, man. Like he got to NXT, he got hurt. Obviously, I know they probably, you know, softened up his style a little bit, but I just think his injuries like just ruined his time here. So I kind of want him to go back, you know.
He'll be in a few weeks. Maybe he'll. It'll be awesome to see him right back.
I would love that.
That'd be awesome. Just different guy.
I would love that.
Other guys, but yeah. So who are you? So we mentioned Kenta as one guy. We mentioned Hayabusa as one. Loki was another one. Who are some other favorites that you have in terms of you know, past, present, and current?
Oh man, present. I just do like my all time like top five has been the same for, you know, the last like 10 years. So I don't think it's gonna change. It's Rob Van Dam, AJ, Hayabusa, Ultimo Dragon, and Kenta. Man, that's like my top five. Now, obviously, I love Kenny Omega. I love Tetsuya Naito. I'm a big Jay Lethal fan. I'm a big Aleister Black fan. I loved him before he came to, you know, WWE. Love Kota Ibushi. That's probably my top five now. But yeah, Naito, man, I love Tetsuya Naito. I think that dude is awesome. I actually liked him before he was, you know, doing the whole LIJ thing.
Yeah, Stardust Genius. Yeah.
I just always thought he's so smooth, man. He just does some things better than a lot of people, man. He's awesome. I love Naito.
Yeah, no, Naito's the best. As far as, you know, and this is one thing that it kind of comes up as we've mentioned a little bit earlier, you know, you kind of diverged, as you said, like you had a bunch of friends that were watching during the Attitude Era and whatnot, and they kind of went there, and then you became a hardcore fan. Is that still today, or do you find that you have a bunch of buddies that will watch it with you and sort of you know, interact and maybe come over to watch a show or whatnot?
It's crazy, man, because it is like that. Like, a lot of my homies don't watch wrestling anymore. So it's like I'm always like going through this, you know, trying to find people to watch it with. And I've actually, you know, through fans like discovering that I like wrestling, I've actually been to some shows. Like, I went and ran into some fans that were fans of my music, and we became like homies, you know, off of the wrestling. So that's been dope. But yeah, it's the same. I got none of my friends, they either only watch WWE or are they, you know, which is fine. But I can't talk wrestling with them because it drives me nuts, and I'll get mad, and I can't do it. Because the way that I am, I love pro wrestling, right? So I'm never, like, sports entertainment is just, it's never going to be my vibe. You know, it's fun to a certain point, you know what I'm saying? But I'm always going to prefer watching two guys that are just, like, phenomenal wrestlers in the ring, you know, doing their thing over two crazy larger than life characters, and they're having a 10-minute rest hold match, you know, that gets that ends in a DQ or something. Like I can do it, but it upsets me. So
no, I have a pretty similar experience as well. I have a decent group of friends now that have sort of gotten a little bit more hardcore into, you know, Japanese. They'll watch independent shows and whatnot, but I still have my other core group of friends. They're like you mentioned, the guys that just watched WWE. And the worst is, like, they'll complain about it a lot too. And I'm like, well, there's other stuff. Like,
you know, oh man, that's the worst thing.
And I'm like, come on, like, here's other.
That's stuff. The worst thing.
I know what you mean. And here you go. They just so you have a similar experience then too.
Oh yeah, and then I'm like, dude, you can even watch it. Like, it comes on Access TV. You can watch it on Friday. It's not like you have to, it's not like how it used to be, man. Like, you don't have to go searching for it. Like, you can literally just turn it on and watch it. Look some highlights up on YouTube, you know, like one. But I do think that even though the Omega Okada match at Wrestle Kingdom isn't my favorite of their matches, I do think it's the most important one, because that is the match where I got a lot of people to start watching New Japan. I got about four or five of my homeboys to start watching New Japan, and they watch it now, and it's because of that match.
Yeah.
You know, like, that was the match where I was like, all right, this is it. You got to start. You got to watch. You have to watch. No more saying you're going to do it. Like, you got to watch this match tonight. You have to watch it. Here's the link. Like, you got to watch. And, you know, so I think that was, like, one of the most important matches, like, in the history of wrestling, because I think it's allowed them to do the things they do, like, come here and sell out these venues. Like, that match turned a lot of people on to Kenny and, you know, the rest of New Japan.
Yeah, and you mentioned Kenny Omega, and I think we'll talk a little bit about him as well, because he is so, in some ways, pretty similar to, you know, for anybody that's listened to your music or followed you on Twitter knows that obviously, the as you said, the anime is a big part of a lot of what you do. The entire stuff of Japanese culture, like we just said, 5 a.m. in Shibuya is the new video that just came out, like, brimming with, you know, stuff with Japan. And I think that's one thing that I think, and I'm the same way, of why I've always sort of been attracted to Kenny Omega in a lot of ways, because he's a dude who I kind of wish I could be him. I just wish I could just, like, but I'm too scared to do it or whatnot,
right?
I'm like, I got the stuff here, but like, he has just embraced it. And has that been a big part of why you've sort of enjoyed Kenny Omega as well? Because he is in a lot of ways sort of a conduit to, like, North Americans. We look, or at least this is how I sort of interpret him, and I look at him and I'm like, man, this guy's just in the culture, and it's awesome, because it's a really awesome culture and really fun thing to get involved with. But yeah, he's as deep in it in a lot of ways, and like you're similarly into it pretty deep in terms of doing the anime and the references, and like you said, you know, you've traveled to Japan a few times as well, but like, yeah, is that one of the things that sort of attracted you to Kenny Omega, besides the awesome wrestling? I mean, of course, he's a great wrestler, but sort of the character and the human being of Kenny Omega, is that a big part of what sort of attracted you to him?
Oh man, Conduit, that was such a good word to use to describe him. Like, see, like, I definitely think so, man. Like, he's just, you see this guy who's from Winnipeg, you know, Canada, and he's completely just, like, soaked up the Japanese culture, and he's the face of New Japan for American people, like, you know, and it's like, and I mean, you could even argue, I mean, obviously, Tanahashi, Okada, Naito, but you can argue that he's the face of New Japan. You know, and it's like, it's crazy, because here's this guy who's from Canada, and he's this white guy, but he's like, the dude will cut a promo in Japanese. Like, you know, his like, storied, like, partner is Kota Ibushi, and they're, like, so close, and it's just, like, seeing him, I love that, man. Like, I love seeing somebody be a foreigner, but not necessarily be a foreigner, you know? Like, he's a foreigner, but he's like loved there, and he carries himself like he belongs there, and I love that about him.
Yeah, and you know, I mentioned a little bit about you traveling to Japan. How many times have you been there?
I've been one time, man. Oh. I went in January, and I was there for a week. I had went out there and did two shows with Mega Ran, and that trip, like, man, it just blew my mind. Like, I don't know if you know, but we got to go to Wrestle Kingdom.
I was gonna ask any live shows that you went to. So you went to Wrestle Kingdom. I'm very jealous.
I went to Wrestle Kingdom 12, because it was like, they were bringing us out there to do these shows, and I'm like, dude, man, can you please, like, try to give me a Wrestle Kingdom ticket? Like, I don't even care where the seat's at.
I just want to go. There. Yeah.
And they give me a ticket, man, and it was crazy. That was the night, you know, obviously Kenny and Jericho and it was amazing. It was really, I don't want to say disappointing, but I wanted Naito to win really bad, and the entire Tokyo Dome wanted Naito.
Yeah, we all did. We all thought it. Yeah.
And when he lost, like, I mean, the fans, they like Okada, you know, they respect him, but when Naito lost that match, man, that place, it was so awkward. Like, everybody was like, wait, what? You know, like, hold on. The whole place wanted him to win, and he just didn't win. It was weird.
Now, did you plan that tour for January 4th, right? There's no way that was just a coincidence, was it?
The Mega Ran, I really don't know, because I know Mega Ran had he kind of was setting it all up, and I honestly think that it just kind of fell because we didn't do a show that night, but we were out there. Like that was like a free day for us, so it was. So I honestly think it just like ended up like that. Which
it seems a little too perfect, though. I don't know.
It was crazy. It was.
Yeah, how excited were you to know that? Like, hey, I'm gonna be there, and then wrestle like that. I can't even imagine like how. That's like the perfect.
Yeah, it was. I was really excited, man. Like it was, and it was. That was like it was one of the best experiences of my life. Like it, like just that trip alone really inspired like almost my entire album that's coming out tomorrow. Just being there, I actually wrote a lot of music when I was there too. Just being around the culture, man. Being around the people out there. It was really like some life-changing experience for me.
So maybe describe a little bit, because, you know, there's a lot of our listeners who have not yet been to Japan, myself included, for a show. And obviously, like, there's a difference of going to, like, a Korakuen show or going to some, you know, just kind of arena show and then the Tokyo Dome. But still, it's still the same experience. Describe, because you've been to shows in, like, North America, of course, right?
Yeah.
How do they differ in terms of stuff? Because I know that there's people always say that there's like, you know, this sort of thing is a little bit different, this sort of thing. Did you notice anything totally different about like, hey, the crowds are way different or this is a little bit different, other than, of course, being, you know, in a different country? But was there a different way that they sort of approached being a crowd at a wrestling show?
I will say like one visual thing that I really noticed was like the Tokyo Dome was so packed that they don't sell merch inside. Like they sell merch outside. So the merch line was like ridiculous. I took a picture of it. It was so many people, and they have like this huge like area where they sell all this merchandise, and the line was like so. It was ridiculous. So they don't sell any merch indoors. I mean, like the Japanese crowds, it's kind of you know what you used to see when you watch tapes. Like they kind of are quiet, but it's not. It's not like the WWE choir where the fans just don't give a damn about what's going on. It's like they're locked in, you know, like they're quiet because they're focused and they're like watching the match. You know what I mean? It's that kind of quiet. And then when something, you know, when something sweet happens, they go nuts. You know, the last 10 minutes of the match where they start teasing finishes and stuff, like they really go crazy. That was cool. And then one thing I think is funny though, I don't know if you can hear it, but like I love how sometimes Japanese fans will just shout out the person's name. And they do that a lot. So that I thought that was kind of cool, and it's funny to me when they do that. But other than that, man, yeah, it's just they just watch it. They pay attention to it, man. Like you don't see a lot of people on their phones and stuff. Like while the show's happening, they're all paying attention and watching the matches. So. It was for me. I mean, I love wrestling, so it was super dope being around, you know, that crowd of people.
Yeah, no, that sounds awesome. One day I'll go. I don't know when. I don't know when I want to go. But so, do you have any plans to go back anytime soon, or check out, you know, if you're gonna go back, go to, you know, multiple shows or whatnot, or check out different companies and whatnot?
I've been talking it out, man. I've been working it out. I met a couple promoters when I was out there, and. Megaran's been talking about trying to set something up because I got an album coming out. He's got something coming out soon. And me and him have a show in Chicago actually on Thursday. And we've been talking
I'll
about
see you there.
Yeah. And me and him been talking about, you know, kind of trying to link up and do something else. So hopefully it happens soon.
That's awesome. Yeah. You have a nice benefit of like, I can't like, you know, my work will never take me to Japan or what. I've tried. I think because I work for a fitness company, and I've noticed in, like, the background of pictures that they use some of our equipment at the New Japan Dojo. It's like old ass equipment. It's like old as hell or whatever, you know, because I mean, I'm sure it's not updated. You know what I mean? It's a dojo. It can't be too nice or whatnot. So I've been like, trying to angle away to be like, hey, I'll go over there. Like, they're not going to send me over there. But you have the benefit. Your job can maybe take you there. So that's pretty awesome. Right. You're able to do that. But, you know, we'll talk a little bit about the hip hop, of course, again, here as we kind of come to an end. But like, you know, when you said that you were sort of starting, you know, because I think I read an interview as well that like when you guys started kind of going with Clear Souls Forces, you started really getting into hip hop. You were still in school, right? So you were still like going to basketball games and coming back and doing tours and going back and forth, right? Like, so it was, you were kind of doing the work life balance there for a little while, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. I had there was a time There was a time one time where we had a show in Brooklyn. It was actually the first time I'd ever been on a plane by myself, because we drove there, but I had my national tournament like the next day, so I had to they flew me back home by myself so I could get on the bus with my team and go to the national tournament. So like we had the show in Brooklyn, and then I came back, and then like my plane got there kind of late, so my whole team's like waiting for me, and then I get there and you know I made it and went to the tournament. But yeah, there were some times where I was doing a lot of traveling and still going to class and you know still trying to get my degree. So it was the last like 2 years of my school was like really hectic.
Well, when you were able to graduate from school, were you able to kind of do the hip hop, or were you able to do like the rapping and the music full time, or was it somewhere you had to also kind of work a job as well?
I did. I graduated. I got my degree, but I was doing it. I didn't have to, when I had, cause you know, I got two kids. I got, my son's 8, my daughter's 4. When I just had my son, like I was good. I didn't have to have a job. I was doing good. We had done a couple tours. We were making some decent money, you know, and then I had my daughter and I gotta be able to do what I gotta do. So I got a job. So now I do it, you know, I do both. Hopefully, I'm hoping I can quit my job soon. That's always been my plan. That's always been my plan. You know, I hate working, but eventually, hopefully, you know, soon I'll be able to get out of there.
That's a nice dream. Yeah. And then you can tour, man, the world and go to as many Japanese wrestling shows as you want.
Yeah, exactly. But no, that's awesome. One thing I will say about my job is, even though I hate it, they do, they know, you know, what I do, and they know that I travel a lot. So they like, whenever I had to do something, they literally just let me go and, you know, and not come back. And they let me get back to working there when I come back. So that's always hard to find. So that's something cool that I do enjoy about that place.
Okay, so we'll give them a little bit of credit then. They at least let you do that sort of stuff. So, you know, before we get out of here, we'll do one more wrestling question here. What are you sort of looking forward to for the rest of the year? We got 2018. It's been a very busy year. We have obviously just wrapped up the G1. What are you expecting for the rest of the wrestling area in terms of New Japan or any sort of wrestling that you're watching? But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff on the line in 2018. God only knows where it's going to go. And this has definitely been an interesting summer and an interesting spring. So yeah, what are you sort of looking forward to for the rest of the year?
I'm really looking forward to, you know, on the better side of things, I'm looking forward to Kenny Omega's title run. I think he needs, I don't want his title run to be like ridden with Bullet Club stuff. You know what I'm saying? Cause he's obviously a phenomenal wrestler. So I think he's finally about to get some really dope, defenses like Ishii. That match is going to be nuts. And I'm really obviously always looking forward to Wrestle Kingdom, but I'm looking forward to that. I actually really want Tanahashi to keep the briefcase, because I think Tanahashi versus, I mean, I think everybody wanted to see Ibushi Omega, but I think if you're going to keep Kenny in New Japan and pass the torch, like there's no better match to have at Wrestle Kingdom than him and Tanahashi. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to what Neville does, man. I love Neville. He finally got out of his WWE contract, so I'm really excited to see where he's going to, you know, pop up at. I'm hoping he pops up in New Japan. And, I mean, I love AJ Styles. Like I said, he's, like, one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. He's, like, if not my favorite, he's my second favorite. And I'm just hoping that his title run picks up some steam. You know what I'm saying? I mean, him and Joe had a dope match at SummerSlam. I hated the ending, but I think that him being involved with Joe, I think is going to be dope. And NXT, man, they got, you know, they keep signing people. They have a loaded, crazy roster right now. So I'm just excited to see what, you know, Matt Riddle and Keith Lee and those guys do in NXT. So it's a lot, you know, a lot that I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, and you mentioned G1 a little bit there. Were you able to keep up with all of G1, or did you kind of skip some shows? It's tough. It's a grind, man.
It's a grind. I felt like, I'm going to be honest, I watched every single B-block match. I didn't watch all the A-block matches, but I felt like...
you didn't miss much.
Right. I felt like B-block was like way, I feel like they were like really unbalanced, you know, like D-Block had Kenny and Naito and Ibushi and Hirooki Goto, who I love. He's like one of my favorite wrestlers. I love Goto and Hirooki Goto and Juice Robinson
and
Zack Sabre Jr. and Sonata and Ishii. Yeah, it's like, when it came out, I remember I actually saw the B Block one first a few months back, and I was like, holy, you know, damn, who's gonna be in A Block? You know, and then I mean, obviously Tanahashi dope, Okada dope, you know, but I felt like they weren't very balanced, and then I also felt like I felt like there were some guys I really wanted to see that weren't there. Like I really wanted Jeff Cobb to be in G1, you know. I really wanted I think there's somebody else I wanted to see in there too, but I've always wanted Jay Lethal to wrestle in New Japan more. I love Jay Lethal, and this was before he won the title. And I just thought that he needed to do something else outside of Ring of Honor. So I thought it would have been dope if he would have, you know, been in G1 as like a surprise entry. But yeah, G1 was crazy this year. As a whole, it's probably the best one I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was awesome. I'm with you though. I would love a little bit more of, because it used to be a few years ago, you'd get a little bit more of the other guys in there, and their roster is so big now that like I feel like they have to have guys. But I love like when Marufuji came in that one year. That was like the greatest thing ever. Every match he had was different and unique or whatever. So that was, and then like he had just some incredible matches up and down the block. And yeah, used to get those like outsider guys, and for you know a few years now they've kind of just been the normal dudes, you know, just the normal guys you see all the time. But yeah, I would love, like, Jeff Cobb seems like a perfect. Right. For that too, but yeah, no, you didn't miss much of the A Block, so don't worry, you just missed a bunch of like, you know, boring.
I watch all Tanahashi's matches. I love
and otherwise you didn't need all that much. No, that's awesome stuff. So yeah, before we get out of here, do you want to let everybody know again where they can follow you on Twitter, where they can follow your music, and then sort of the last little plug for Cerebral Apex coming out guys by the time everybody listens to this.
Yeah, man. Follow me on Twitter, man. The Novelist, THENOVELISS. I love talking about wrestling with fans and other people. So I'm real active on Twitter, man. I love, you know, I just like sharing the stuff that I'm interested in on there. And hopefully finding other people that are interested in the same thing. My new album, man, Cerebral Apex. It'll be out, you know, by the time you guys check this out. You can get it at novelist.bandcamp.com. It'll be on all streaming sites, you know, whatever you stream music on, you can get it there. And you can follow me on Instagram too, man, at novelistcsf. And I'm on there a lot too, so check out the album. New video just came out today, and that's it. Peace.
All right, yeah, thank you so much for coming on to the show, and we'll have to do this again sometime soon.
Yeah, man, I'm a big fan of you and you guys, and thank you, man. Thank you for having me on.
Sure, that is Novelist again, as we mentioned, novelist.bandcamp.com or wherever you can stream your music, Spotify and all the other good stuff. Cerebral Apex coming out August 28th, or by the time most of you guys listen to this. We'll see you next time on the Voice Wrestling Podcast. Take care.
Yes, sir. Go ACH, go. 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 Go ACH, go.
Power and speed, I master the craft of battle hit. 450 splash, I'm jumping out of the atmosphere. On a voyage to be the best in the world while I'm suplexing y'all. Catch a one piece from Luffy, the rest of the
turnbuckles in a flyweight. Been on this road so long that I became a cruiserweight. These exclusive elusive is to the point I got the title belt.
Here it comes again, lunch. Will it be the same old, same old? Or are you ready to take a vacation from the ordinary with the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub at Firehouse Subs? Freshly sliced smoked turkey breast, craveably sweet mustard sauce, and a hint of Caribbean seasoning. Just $5.55 for a medium. Save time. Order the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub on the Firehouse Subs app. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Participating locations, limited time only, plus tax. Prices may vary for delivery.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.